Translation. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devakini, the mother of God and all the demigods, gave birth to a child. Thus she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. Purport. The spiritual master is sometimes glorified as Sarva Deva Mayo Guru. Bhagavatam 11.7.27. By the grace of the Guru, the spiritual master, one can understand the different kinds of devatas. The word deva refers to God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original source of all the demigods, who are also called devas. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.2, the Lord says, Aham adir devanam. I am the source of all the devas. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, the original person, expands in different forms. Tad-aikshata bahushyam. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. He alone has expanded into many. Advaitam, achutam, anadim, anantarupam. Brahma Samhita 5.33. There are different grades of forms known as Swamsa and Vibhinamsa. Swamsa expansions, or Vishnu Tattva, are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the Vibhinamsa are Jiva Tattva, who are part and parcel of the Lord. Mamaivamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana. We accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worship Him. All the parts and expansions of the Lord are automatically worshipped. Sarvarhanam achutye chya. Bhagavatam 4.31.14. Krishna is known as Achuta, Senayor Uvayor Mande Adatam Stapayame Achuta. By worshipping Achuta, Krishna, one automatically worships all the demigods. There is no need of separately worshipping either Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva. One concentrates upon Krishna. One worships everyone. Therefore, because Devaki gave birth to Krishna, she is described here as Sarva Devata. So Krishna's coming to us through the devotees. That Krishna is available means because the devotees are revealing the Lord. Krishna being everything, so there's nothing that Krishna is not involved in. But to actually understand what is Krishna, that happens only by the grace of the devotees. Otherwise, then, without the grace of the devotees, the Lord can't be appreciated. So, for Krishna, then, this is important, because for Krishna, then, him and his expansions, then they are what is important to him. Because he himself is God, that's not going to change. He doesn't have to worry that somehow or another someone else will come along. It's not like Indra. Right? Indra has to worry that someone else will come along. And they do. Right? There's 14 of them in one day of Brahma. Right? So it's real. But for Krishna, that's not a possibility. It's not by someone can accrue power to become God. So for him, godness is just standard. That's his existence. Right? Being God is his existence. But expanding the devotees, then that's where the taste lies. By expanding the devotees, then Krishna is able to appreciate the increase in happiness by the engagement in rasa. Because rasa is dynamic. Atmarama is, there's a pleasure there, but it's not dynamic, it's static. It doesn't do anything, it doesn't accomplish anything. But the rasa that is active, that gives ever-increasing flavor, ever-increasing taste. So that is had by Krishna in the association of devotees. Right? No devotees, then where is this rasa, this taste going to be had? So for Krishna, then, the devotees are the important element. So it's not so much, as Prabhupada's explaining here, that the expansions of the Lord and all the devatas and all these different things, that the mechanical, arrangements of the cosmic creations. But what's important to him is the devotee to which all these aspects are manifest. Right? Because Krishna is Vishnu Tattva. He is expanding. He is the creation. He expands his potencies as the demigods. So all these different aspects then are just what he does. He just thinks of it, it happens. But what's interesting to him is interacting with the devotees, where it's not a matter of he thinks of it, it happens. It's a matter of what the devotee's interest is, that's what happens. Right? Does that make sense? It means in our position where we're trying to be the supreme controller, then this concept of being the supreme controller, you know, it looks like it's that is the best. That looks like that's really what one wants. But the person who is the supreme controller, that's just existence. So what's interesting is doing what others want to do. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, for example, the father and the son. Now, the father may be still quite worried about that element of control of the son because of that proximity and things like that. And, you know, there may be difficulties or differences of opinions or so many different things like that. And so relationship may go very nicely or not. Why? Because the father still has that element of control, and the son has that element of control. But we see with the grandfather, right? So the father wants the son to do what he's doing. Right? That's the standard thing. Whatever the father's doing, he has his business. He wants the son to join that. He's a doctor. He wants the son to be a doctor. He's a lawyer. He wants the son to be a lawyer. You know, like that. Right? But now the grandfather, it has nothing to do with what the grandfather's doing. It's all about the grandchild. Whatever the grandchild wants to do, that's what the grandfather wants to do. You understand? Why? Because where's the threat? There's no connection. The grandfather's position will not be adjusted by the grandchild. Right? The father feels his position is maintained or weakened by the position of the son, but the grandfather never feels that. Right? Grandfather's grandfather. What the kids do, grandchildren do, that's up to them. Their responsibility is their parents, not them. You understand? So this element of being detached that the grandparents have, give them that superior position. And therefore, it's all about the grandchild. The grandchild wants to go for a walk, they go for a walk. They want to play horses, they do that, they want to eat. It doesn't matter. It's all about the grandchild. And they actually have more fun with the child than the parents do. You know, way more. Why? Because of that element of detachment. So, for Krishna, there is no question that anybody's going to take his position. His position is not based on anybody else's position. Right? So for Krishna, therefore, just the rasa of interacting with the devotees as they like, that's what he does. Right? Does that make sense? He's doing rasa dance with the gopis. Why? That's what the gopis want to do. Right? Girls like to sing and dance. So that's what he's doing. Is he doing a rasa dance with the cavern boys? No. They want to wrestle and run around and yell and scream and steal Madhu Mangal's lunch and see what kind of how upset he gets. That's what they want to do. Does that make sense? So that's what he does. Mother Yashoda, is she into either of those? No. It's all about her taking care of Krishna and feeding Krishna and making all the arrangements for Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is the principle of the ashram and visha. Krishna is the reservoir of rasa, reservoir of pleasure. So he is all the different aspects of rasa, but a particular devotee is the shelter of a particular aspect of this rasa. So that's the aspect of Krishna manifest to them. Right? He can manifest anything to anybody, but that's not what they're interested in. Right? It's not a matter of, this is what I feel like, so this is what I want to do. You know, Krishna doesn't have to worry about that. So for him, what's interesting is manifesting rasa according to the flavor of the devotee. Does this make sense? So that means the revelation of Krishna is through the devotee. Because it's the devotee who wants to see Krishna in that particular way. So in other words, Braja Krishna is manifest because there are devotees who want to see Krishna in that mood of Braja Krishna. Right? Otherwise there's Dwarka Krishna, there's Vaikuntha Krishna. Does that make sense? Because those devotees want to see him in that way. Radharani wants to see him as Braja Krishna. Right? Rukmini wants to see him as Dwarka Krishna. So, this whole point of that the manifestation of the Lord is through the devotees. Now, when the devotee manifests in that, when the Lord manifests in that way, there's always associates. Right? So those are the deities. So it's because of that desire of the devotee that the Lord manifests in that way, therefore, all the dham, the paraphernalia, the associates, the particular pastimes, all that goes along with it. Does it make sense? So therefore, it's through the devotees that everything is manifest. So one wants to be very, very careful to understand this. We, in our, worrying about who's in control and who's got power, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and all this kind of, blah, blah. Then we're always so worried about, somebody, being in the position of the guru or the authority or anything like that. But we have to understand this perspective is thoroughly mundane. Because on the transcendental platform for Krishna, then it's all about the devotee. It's all about the manifestation through the devotee. The problem is we can only see, at best, a few senior devotees, and everybody else, basically, they're a schmutz, right? But the point is it's through the devotees, all of the devotees, that the pastime is happening. So all the devotees are involved in the Sankirtan mission. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is manifesting. But to appreciate that, then means we have to not be worried about who's in control and who's going to enjoy. But it's a matter of service. So here Devaki then, because of her mood, then Vasudeva Krishna is manifest. And Vasudeva Krishna means all the demigods. Right? Because Vasudeva Krishna performs his pastimes with all the demigods. All the demigods come and appear as the Yadu dynasty. Right? So it's through her that there's this manifestation. Right? Does this make sense? Any questions on this? Yes. They're doing a service that creates anxiety. Resentment. Means anxiety, two different things here. Anxiety is one thing, resentment's another. What would cause resentment? I'm not sure exactly the context of the question. But resentment for who? Okay. And so, what's the question?
So, if you're not developing addiction for Krishna, is there benefit in doing the service?
Is there benefit in doing the service? Means there's always benefit in doing the service, but at the same time, as one can always have be developed, cultivating, you know, negative aspects also. That's what mixed devotional service means. You're getting the benefit of pure devotional service and you're getting the benefit of non-devotional service. Does that make sense? Problem is devotional service, the benefit is always positive. But the benefit from the mundane is not always positive. If it's pious, then you'll get some material credits. If it's not pious, then it doesn't really do a whole lot. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, by doing the service, you'll always get benefit. That aspect is there. Now, the element to balance is just if one's sick, then to discuss that with the authorities. You know, that's one thing. You know, or don't be resentful. If you haven't expressed that they don't know you're sick, then what's the position of your being resentful? You know what I'm saying? Because they don't know. You can only be resentful if someone knows, and then despite that, then they're still insistent, right? Or there's not a cause for the insistence. In other words, let's say everybody's sick. You know, so then what are you going to do, right? It's not that no one's sick in the three worlds and you're the only one that's sick, and then somehow or another everybody else is just sitting back and enjoying. They're sitting on the roof, you know, drinking a slab of tinnies there, and you're having to go and do the puja. Right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah? Yeah, so it's not exactly, you have to just see the context of the whole thing. If you've explained it, and that. I mean, so in other words, there's a lack of sensitivity or lack of dynamic element like that, then that's something to, it's not ideal, but the point is where is ideal in the material world? Right? There's also this idea that material world means ideal, but it doesn't exist. Right? There isn't such a thing. There is no ideal. Brahma constantly, even though he's the most pious living entity in the universe, he has to deal with problems all day long. Right? Constantly there's some demon coming and taking over, kicking the demigods out. Something is happening that just shouldn't be happening in the universal manager. And he has to deal with it. Right? So it's just, that's life. You understand? So therefore it's a matter of, you know, cooperation, trying to explain, work together and all that. Because you also have to make sure is what your definition of sick is actually sick also. You know what I'm saying? So it's a balance, that the degree that you actually are sick and to the degree that others are sensitive to that, that has to be a balance there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Means it is true. See, why we call everybody is part and parcel of Krishna, so everybody, their constitutional position is devotee. Who we call devotees are those who recognize it. See, I mean, you can take it even further, is that everything in the creation is Krishna. So there's nothing where Krishna is not manifest. So even the karmis, there's in the Gita Prabhupada, it's talking about that all the living entities are God conscious. All. The difference is only the devotees know it, the others don't. See, let's say you have the person, he's interested in his social prestige, but that prestige that he's looking for is Krishna. Someone else is looking for wealth, that's Krishna. So what they're conscious of, because the dead matter they're conscious of only because they think that's the source of that, of what they're looking for. Right? They think their social position, the position itself, is the cause of that social status, but it's actually Krishna. Right? So they think that the material energy is the cause of it. So they're conscious of God, but they don't actually know who God is. Right? So, therefore, those who understand that they're given the position called devotees, and those who don't are called according to what they are, what is the purpose of their engagement. If their engagement is fruitive, they're called karmis. If their engagement is liberation, they're called jnanis. Right? Is that what it says? Yeah. So the language is quite fine because everybody uses it. You know, I mean, it's a blue-collar worker, a white-collar worker, or intellectual, or, you understand, you know, or a liberal or a conservative. So everybody's categorizing. It's just a matter of what, at what particular time and space, which categorizations are okay or which are not. Right? Yeah, just like now you might say mentally challenged. You know, and that's the okay term. Mentally retarded is kind of bad. But in the past, mentally retarded was the politically correct term. Right? You understand? So the whole point is it's just a matter of the modes of nature and which way the wind's blowing, all these different things. So don't get distracted because of the language. It's a matter of the philosophy. You have to define it. So, in other words, everything is in Krishna's creation. Krishna is in control of everything. So many things may be learned through even the karmas. That's the 11th canto. Then the Python saga. Then he had 22 gurus. So, and in the conclusion of that whole chapter, Krishna's pointing out even one can learn from one's own body about philosophy of Krishna consciousness, if you're aware. Because everything being Krishna, therefore you can see Krishna in everything. Does that make sense? But that ability to see properly, that has to come from Guru. Otherwise we might speculate what that means. How do we develop this Purusha Bhav? Means you want to cultivate it. So how to make it better?
Oh, give it up.
Okay, that's a different right. How to develop humility? How to develop the Purusha Bhav? Giving it up means basically understanding who is the Purusha. Purusha is Krishna. Right? So Vishnu is the Purusha, he's the controller, he's therefore he's the enjoyer. Right? The living entity is the enjoyer. But the point is who's in the position of enjoyer is in a more powerful position. Just due to lack of understanding culture, therefore we don't see it that way. Just like what we're saying. The grandfather is in the superior position, that's why he's not bothered about getting involved with the child. Right? The grandchild. So the grandfather, he's being controlled by the grandchild, even though he's in the stronger position. Right? Does that make sense? So the grandfather there is enjoying that interaction, but it's based on the interest of the who he's controlled by. You understand? So the one who's controlled is the one who's enjoying. Right? But we have the idea, no, the one who controls is the one who's enjoying. That's called the mode of ignorance. That's when no one enjoys in this world, because they have it backwards. And that's why everybody enjoys in the spiritual world, because they see it in the proper perspective. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is that Krishna is the controller and enjoyer. So understanding that, then by contemplating that and seeing its practical application, then it works nicely.
Okay. So like we sometimes hear people from different groups and they say they're only interested in Krishna's pastimes, they all Krishna Vrindavan and so like that the real recipient of this. How
real recipients. No, that's an oxymoron. You understand oxymoron? They just don't match. You know, like say, you know, I said, he's gently vicious, you know, or something. They just don't go together. So those who only focus on a particular pastime and don't acknowledge anyone else, and then the term real receipt, those don't go together. Real seek means they appreciate rasa, So wherever it's manifest, they will appreciate it. They may have their particular taste, you know. But it's just like this. Let's say you have a mother. Okay? Now, then she has her direct interaction with the child, right? Her interaction, resting, feeding, doing those things, right? And so that, for her, is the nicest of all the activities that the child does, because she had she doesn't want to hear about what her child does at school, or what she did with friends, or his playing in the afternoon out in the backyard. She doesn't want to hear it, because being a real Rasik, then she only wants to hear about the highest pastimes of parental rasa, of her and her interaction with the child, right? Isn't that wouldn't you call that's a good mother? No, you'd say, that's weird. Right? So that's the point. It's those who claim to be real Rasiks, because they only hear about Krishna and the gopis, that's weird. That's just upfront weird. Lalita Devi, in her kunj, in Radhika, right? So you have to take it that within the cosmos, in the spiritual realm, is the highest, right? Within the spiritual realm, Golok is the highest. Within Golok, then Braj is the highest. And then Braj, then Radhakund is the highest. Okay? So now all the Astasaki, they all have the kunjas there. In Lalita's kunja, the decorations on the walls are pictures of Krishna killing the demons. That's a real receipt. Well, these other ones, that's generally what we call sahajas. Like that. It's just bogus. It may be their particular interest and taste, nice. But to say that's the only place you can find rasa, that's totally bogus. Does that make sense? There's no compromise in this. Rasik means you appreciate anything Krishna does. The gopis are chastising Krishna because he's behaving in a very boyish way and not dealing, you know, at the moment with the particular sensitivities of the girls at that point. And so then they chastise him for that by saying, you know, you don't know how to deal properly with girls, you know? And they give the example of how he is Ramachandra, cut off Suparna's nose. This is Braj pastimes. You understand? So they know all of these things. So whatever example applies, wherever that's being tasted, that's... Right? That one Brahmin in South India, he was appreciating the rasa between Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield. He had the Bhagavad Gita. He couldn't read, it was upside down. Right? But he was very much absorbed. So Lord Chaitanya said, he's the devotee. You understand? So particular groups are just that. They're just particular groups in the universe. Just another particular group. Right? So don't worry about particular groups. Karma yoga and karma misra bhakti. What's the difference? So yoga, first you have to understand yoga. Yoga means connection with the Lord, right? And it also indicates that there's an activity with particular forms that generate that connection. Does that make sense? Right? It means if you want a result, you have to perform an activity. Right? You don't perform an activity with nothing, you perform an activity with something. Yes? Right. So therefore, yoga is the proper performance of activities with proper forms that get an action, a result that's connected to Krishna. That's yoga. Okay? Make sense? So karma yoga means the activities of Krishna consciousness. Right? Jnana yoga means the knowledge used in those activities of Krishna consciousness. Right? Jnana yoga means the absorption in Krishna, who is the beneficiary of the application of your of Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga in Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So Karma Misra simply means that while you're performing the Karma Yoga, that there's pure devotional service mixed with you know, something fruit. Right? That's why you use Karma Misra. It means that there's the devotional service is mixed with some fruit about it. If it's Jnana Misra, it means it's mixed with some element of liberation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So all it is, it means the devotional service is going on at the same time as there is some fruit of benefit that one wants from it. Like, let's say you're doing a service for Krishna to please Krishna, and you actually want to please Krishna, but at the same time you want everybody else to notice that you're pleasing Krishna. So that's mixed. So you're getting the benefit of serving Krishna, but also then you'll get the reaction to that other desire. You know, so it may go nicely or not nicely, depending upon which will be best for your Krishna consciousness. You know, or best for what you want. Right? Does that make sense? Yes?
Follow on from that question. Is there a distinction between Karma Yoga and Pure Bhakti?
No. Karma Yoga is simply defining the activities of, I mean, the activities of bhakti, right? Karma means action. So Karma Yoga and pure devotional service, the cable of bhakti, are the same thing. But if you're indicating within sadhana, then it would mean that someone is focusing on engaging their activities in the Lord's service. Because by, that's where their consciousness lies, right? They're able to focus on the particular physical endeavor. So then they will be considered in Karma Yoga. Right? Because that's the stage of development of bhakti that they're at. So it's a term that can mean the whole range. In other words, from the newest person engaging in devotional service up to the topmost. It's the same aspect. But generally it's applied to indicate the activities of Krishna consciousness within sadhana bhakti. Does that make sense? Right. Because once one's on the liberated platform, the activities aren't so much, how you say, okay, let's say, once one is advanced in the position of liberation, then the focus is on Krishna, so all the activities are connected to Krishna. But otherwise, then there might be the element of the interest in the particular activity that you're using in Krishna's service, rather than its interest is its use in Krishna's service. Like that. Does that make sense? So generally, once it crosses that aspect, then it's not mentioned anymore. But the point is that you're engaging your activities simply to please Krishna. That's pure devotional service, so that would still be called Karma Yoga. Like that. In other words, the Vedic terms have a wide range of applications. Right? So depending on the context, it would be either indicating pure devotional service or mixed devotional service.
So following on from that, the idea of acting according to our nature, material conditioning, and using that in Krishna's service, is that in some sense inferior to just doing what Krishna desires or something like that?
But what's the difference? Krishna is going to desire you to do something that is not according to your conditioning? Right? Krishna ever asked Arjuna to sit down and, you know, do some study and then teach classes? Or, you know, why is he just sitting around all day? Why doesn't he go out and get himself a job? You know, be practical, start a business. Right? So, in other words, Arjuna only engages in kshatriya activities as a grihastha in Krishna's service. So the point is Krishna doesn't ask you to do something outside of your nature. Right? Other people might. Means there's this false idea that not being the body means you don't have to use the body according to its nature. Just like, I'm not this knife, so therefore I don't have to use the knife and what a knife does. I can use it as a hammer, I can use it as a shoehorn, I can do anything I want with it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's basically the level of foolishness when people say, oh, you're not this body, so you don't actually have to, we're not bound by doing the duties connected with the body. It's that foolish. Means the point is being not the body means that we engage the nature that the body has in Krishna's service rather than in our own service. Being the body means we think what the body can do is for us. Being not the body means what the body can do is for Krishna. That's the difference. So this other stuff is just a misunderstanding of philosophy. Right? It's nice, it's interesting sentiment, but it has actually no reality. Because the dharma of something, the nature of something is already established by God. So since that's how he established it, why would he want it to act different from its nature? Especially when in Gita he said, don't perform, even though you can perform someone else's nature, don't do it. Because Krishna wants to interact with you according to your nature. Mother Yashoda could go out with the cowherd boys when they go out there and try to take part in the wrestling and all that. Of course, she'd be telling them what to do. Right? She probably would rest herself, but don't be so rough and all that. And, come on, you boys, don't sit over there, get involved, and like that. You know. And so, how would that day go out in the field? You know, and everybody come back and go, wow, that was a fabulous day with Krishna. Right? No, it'll completely ruin the mood. Not that it can't be done. So this idea, the modern concept is that a position is defined by a skill set, not by a mentality. But the point is the mentality and skill set go together. Just like the businessman can run a school, can run a hospital. In fact, they're doing it, and they make tons of money. How much does it cost to go to school now? Right? How much does it cost to go to the doctor if you don't have insurance? Right? Why? Because businessmen are running those institutions. What should it be? It should be available. Why? Because Brahmins are supposed to be running. So that's what Krishna's talking about. You can develop a skill set, because that's just a matter of practice. The point is you won't have the mentality. It'll never happen. The businessman cannot run an educational institution as a businessman. He might be able to retire and then teach what he knows. That he might be able to. But he won't be able to be functioning as a businessman. You understand? So that's the whole thing. This idea devotees come up with, it's an atheistic concept, right? That the body and rosa sattva body have a nature. So it's not about changing the nature, it's about what using the nature in Krishna's service. Why we want to change the nature is because we're still affected by the purusha bhava, who's in control and who's enjoying. So it's a matter of prestige, it's not a matter of Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, it's sad, but, it happens. That's why the Gita opens with this. It's the very basis for Krishna having a spiritual discussion with Arjuna is he's trying to do this. Right? And then he goes through and explains Krishna consciousness where he's now comfortable to act in his own natural position. And after 30, 40 years, now we're professing, the end of the chapter, the first chapter, that this is now a spiritual position. Krishna called him a fool. Right? Krishna's opinion is not going to change in 40 years. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't change. You can purify nature, you can't change it. Right? You can have a nice dog or you can have a nasty dog, but in any case it'll be a dog. It's not going to change. Right? They can be trained or untrained. So therefore, you can take your nature and purify it. and engage in Krishna service, but you can't change it. It just doesn't happen. And there's no need to change it. That's the point. Krishna is happy with every position. That's why we see him throughout the Bhagavatam and the Vedic literatures interacting with a wide variety of devotees. To him it doesn't matter. It matters only to us. We're the ones that puts the social prestige. You know, just like if you're going to use intelligence, then it's very easy to figure out what you're doing as an occupation, right? Are you independently running something yourself, or are you working for somebody? Right? It's not rocket science. So we can easily just figure oneself out. But in 40 years, no one can figure it out. Why? Because no one wants to figure it out. Because it's a matter of social prestige. At the same time, because of that lack of sensitivity, to be able to understand that, then they also can't understand the other side, which means the ashram side, everybody's a Brahmin. There is only Brahminical ashram in the Vedic culture. There is no four orders. Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra are Varna, not ashram. Ashram's only Brahminical. Right? There's not another set of ashram rules. It's only one set. So, therefore, that's where devotees are all Brahmins. Because their lifestyle is based around understanding Brahman, therefore the Brahmins. Right? So that's why anybody can do any of the activities of Krishna consciousness, including the deity worship. But if it's an occupation of full time doing deity worship day in, day out for the rest of their life, that only generally those with a Brahminical nature can do. Or someone who's very advanced from the ashram side, then they can do it based on the ashram. Right? So now, that's the answer to whatever was it, but everybody tries to force it on the varna side. That's called the mode of ignorance. Why force something unnecessary? Varna is varna. Ashram is where everyone's Brahminical. Because when it comes to who does what, as far as the skills go and the occupation, the mentality must match the ability. And therefore, who's good at the one area, they're the ones that should take the lead. And if you're doing some business for the temple, those who actually know business should say what happens. If it's the quote-unquote senior devotees, then they're supposed to say, unless they're businessmen, it will fail. It's just guaranteed. You know, so this idea, because I'm a senior man, I know everything about everything. Nice. But in reality, on the varna side, that doesn't apply. Ashram, yes, but varna, no. Varna is according to your ability. That's where you're able to, that's where you shine, is in that area. In other areas, you just don't. It's not going to work. So this inability to distinguish between the nature of varna and ashram, which is the spiritual and which is the material. In other words, ashram is the spiritual, varna is the social. But we try to impose the spiritual on the social and the social on the spiritual. That's due to the mode of ignorance. Krishna mentioned that. When you reverse, religion becomes irreligion, irreligion, religion, and that's the mode of ignorance. You know, things in devotional service, oh, that's not devotional, that's not spiritual, that's the mode of ignorance. It's popular, but the mode of ignorance. Is that the time? Yes? No? Popular meaning due to popular theories that are going on in the mundane society, devotees like to take those up and, you know, wave them around a bit and think that because they're devotees and whatever they do now, it means I'm a devotee, so therefore whatever I do, and I engage in spiritual life, right? That's your A and C, right? Now, therefore, whatever I do, it's spiritual. But the problem is there's a fault in that element of B, because that element of whatever you do and devotional service may be two different things. You know what I'm saying? So it's faulty logic. But nobody catches it. that it's whatever I feel, it must be spiritual. No, it's whatever you feel, that's from your conditioning. Now, if that's connected to Krishna, then it's spiritual. If it's not, it's just mundane. Now, you might have more refined mundane. You know, as we were discussing yesterday, the selfless moralist may be more refined and developed than the selfish immoralist. Right? But it still doesn't make it spiritual. But in the material world, in your, at least within the Western concept, your Abrahamic religions, that's as high as they get. They don't teach above it. Right? That's the platform they function from. Though they do introduce theistic moralism. But the theistic aspect is only to make you more moral. Right? Because otherwise, for the selfless moralist, in public he'll always be moral, but in the privacy of his own home, if nobody knows about it, what does it matter? So, to improve the quality of the social system, therefore if there's God, he also sees what you do in your house, so you'll also be moral in your house. You understand? So it improves the quality of the, moral social environment. But it's not actually because you care about God. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's a matter of I do my moral work, I get rewarded for that by God, I go to heaven. And then I'll be happy. You know, with my family and my dog. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's not actually going. So if we take these positions that these are actually spiritual, then that's a fault. Because they're not spiritual. You can spiritualize them by connecting to Krishna. But on their own, they're not inherently spiritual. But we're taking them and inherently, they're naturally spiritual. So that's why the Shastras give what is Dharma. So what is the nature of each thing? Therefore, who does what? What's one's identity? What's another's identity? What's your relationship? Therefore, what do you do in that relationship? And that's science. Everything else is sentiment. Is that okay? Okay. Something else?
Can you explain about how it is that devotees may have certain karma about generating, getting stuck so much money, so many things, but at the same time devotees are so certain varying degrees outside their karma?
No, but they're working within. It means you're working for Krishna, so it's not about your karma. You're working with Krishna, so it's about engaging your conditioning in Krishna's nature. So like you mentioned, let's say money. So the nature, let's say, is to generate money, right? To work in the field of economics. So according to karma, you would get a certain amount, or could generate a certain amount. But because you're using that nature now for serving Krishna, then it can go beyond that. Because karma only applies with what you'll get yourself. Right? But it doesn't change what your nature is. Right? You'll still be, let's say, good at economics. But now you're doing the economics for Krishna, so you're generating a lot more than you will for yourself. Right? Does that make sense? Yes?
So does that mean devotees don't need to look at their astrology as a waste of time?
The devotees don't need to look at astrology. What's the connection? They don't quite catch the connection between those two points.
Oh, it might be certain. It was just the same thing with astrology.
No, but this is a whole different topic. We were talking nature and economics and karma. How did astrology come into this and auspicious and inauspicious?
We have a certain
you understand this is a different question. You understand that? No, it's okay. It's a different question. As long as you understand it's a different question.
Well, I see it as indicative that we have a certain karma of what's going to happen to us and what's not going to happen, but then we start retending.
No, that's the point is, okay, so you're coming in from that angle. Okay, so this is the question. The other one was not your question. Okay. Yeah, but it's a different question. So it means the clearer you ask your question, the better the answer. Right? So the question is, okay, so then astrologically, could someone get something different than this in the chart? The chart is all about the situation. That's the first thing to understand about a chart. The birth chart simply defines what situations you'll be in. It doesn't define what you'll do with them. That's your free will. Right? So this chart, why it's there is because you've acted in the past. So whatever your actions in the past, that accumulation, that's been there for what planets, position the planets are in for this life to give you the results of previous actions. Right? So the situations are created from there. By conditioning, you'll generally always act in a certain way. As a devotee, you may act beyond that. Beyond that means what's beyond the scope of astrology, which means devotion and service. You know, bless their little souls, but no astrologer can tell you about devotional service by looking at a chart. It's not there. You know what I'm saying? It's not what they deal with. It only deals with Dhamma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. It doesn't deal with Bhakti. They'll take religiousness and interpret that as Bhakti, but it doesn't define Bhakti. It's got a limit, right? Now, sub-dharma, that is, so they can take dharma if that's connected, because it's the same thing. But it's not that the chart can tell when someone's going to become a devotee. You may tell them when they're going to become religious, but so many people are religious. But who becomes a devotee, that can't be taught. Right? Always remember, hindsight is 20/20. Does that make sense? So it's easy to look back. Oh, here, that's not that. That's good. Because of this planet, that's why you joined. No, that's bogus. Because of the association of devotees, at that moment you were supposed to become a little bit more religious. But you, an association of devotees, took it into pure religion. So then it became a devotee. You understand? That's the... Remember, for most, it's an occupation. So then, the point comes is that Krishna being in control of it, the point is you're supposed to learn something from your karma. Right? The reason that you get a reaction to something is because you've done a particular activity. Yes? And then the reaction to that, there's something to learn. It was good, therefore you get a good result. It was bad, you get a bad result. And so you learn from that. Good work gets good result, bad work gets bad result. Right? Ultimately, you're supposed to learn as devotional service is what you're supposed to do, and in devotional service, you apply good things to Krishna's service. Right? You don't engage sinful things in Krishna's service, you engage pious things in Krishna's service, right? That's why piety is given credit in this world. Because at least the person's not doing devotional service with that piety, but at least they're pious. So if they took up devotional service, then they would be rightly situated. They have the proper culture. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's given credit. And sinful activities aren't useful in devotional service. That's why then you get a reaction for it. Okay? So now, for the devotee, now let's say he has, by the performance of his devotional service, learned something, understood it. So technically, there's no need for the reaction. So that's why sometimes things that are in the chart, you know, the great, you know, doomsday, you know, like that, this is supposed to happen, and it doesn't happen. Why not? Because whatever is to be learned by that, you've already learned. So it's not necessary. But if you haven't, if there's still something to learn, it will happen, to whatever degree. But because devotees are more sensitive to these things, generally the reactions are much less than they would be if you weren't. You know, like Prabhupada says, you got a cut on your finger, you should have lost your arm. Right? So it's been reduced. So this is Krishna karma. Does that make sense?
How come Prabhupada's astrology was so accurate?
Yeah, that is situations. But it, here, it's just like this. Okay. Trying to think. Can a thermometer tell you what color the wall is? No. Why not? Okay. So in other words, it doesn't have that thing that connects with whatever it is. So astrology only deals in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. It doesn't deal in Bhakti. It can't tell you what is devotional. But the point is Piety is what the devotee engages in Krishna service, so it can tell you all the piety that a devotee has. You understand? Don't mix the two.
So is there a way to tell how much we've learned the lessons and how much karma we have, or do you just have it?
What's the point? What would you do if you knew that? Then what? Sit back on your couch because this time the reaction won't be so bad, and next time I'll be a little more careful? Or what's the point? You understand? You know what I mean? Saying it's interesting, just, you know, like, you know, what's in, you know, one of the magazines on the shelf. It's interesting, but what's the point? You know what I'm saying? Just because it's Vedic, it doesn't mean that it's any less mundane. Vedic is pious mundane. Modern is impious mundane. You understand? So the Vedic is called apara vidya. Para means transcendental. Apara means it's not transcendental, but compatible with transcendental. Right? What's not compatible with transcendental is called avidya, or ignorance. So the same knowledge, if it's used in connection with paravidya or transcendental, is called apara. If it's not used in connection, it's called ignorance. Yeah? So the whole point is how will you use that knowledge? Does that make sense? That's what you want to think. So the point is therefore, if Krishna is taking care of the karma, then what's the real thing to do? Yes. Right? In other words, if that's the thing that gives the real benefit in serving Krishna, that's what we should be doing. Does that make sense? So the conclusion comes out that, not that, okay, now it's less, now I can enjoy material life because I'm getting less material reaction. But who thinks like that gets more reaction. That's the thing, is you can't, as we mentioned in the beginning, you can't be the controller and the enjoyer. Right? Who's controlled is who enjoys. Right? Does that make sense? So you can't have the knowledge that it's there and be absorbed in getting happiness, material happiness from that, at the same time be Krishna conscious. The Krishna conscious person doesn't worry about these things. The person who's not Krishna conscious worries about these things. Does that make sense? So in other words, the astrological chart simply gives an indication of situations. But the point of using those situations in Krishna service, that's up to you. That's your free will. And depending on your free will this life, that defines your situations or predestiny in the future. Does that make sense? Does that work?
Is astrology still a really useful way of determining our nature?
It gives an idea of nature. It gives an idea of nature, but the point is you still have to use it. Right? You can sit down and look at the chart and, you know, sit with the person and, you know, probably depending upon their expertise and, you know, a few minutes or 20 minutes, half an hour, you can work out all the things in your nature. Now, the question is now what are you going to do with that for the rest of your life? You know what I'm saying? So that's easy. You know, it's just like you want to know how to dress for the weather. So what do? You look out the window. Or if you're still not sure, you open the window or just go outside for a moment to tell what's the temperature or what's the wind or, you know, stuff like that. And then you dress accordingly. So all it is it's just the facts of what you have to work with. But we make the situations into the reality. That's the modern culture. Modern culture is, if you have the situation, you'll be happy. You have this house, you have this car, you live in this neighborhood, you wear these shoes, you know, you have that watch, then you'll be happy. But those are situations. Those aren't happiness. Happiness is what you do with the car, what you do with the house, what you do with the shoes. problem is that's way beyond modern culture to deal with, so it gets scary. So it's just a matter of, yes, I can tell you that if that's what you're interested in. If you can't figure it out already, look at the chart, that, or you have an idea, you want to confirm it, great. But now what are you going to do with it? Right? It's not that, ooh, it's this thing, it's there, it's mystical, it does all that stuff. That's not what it's for. Does that make sense? It's for just presenting facts that are there so you know how to behave, how to deal. Because you say this planet's there, it has this influence, and so these situations. Okay, nice, but why is it like that? Because that's how you behaved in last life. So the point is if that's good, then you should continue in that way, because it's getting good. But if it's bad, then what's to learn from that? Not that, oh, I have these situations, and what can I do? The point is one wasn't neither Krishna conscious nor pious, therefore there's a bad reaction. So now the solution is not to do nothing and be not Krishna conscious. The solution is behave properly, be Krishna conscious. That's what you should learn from anything from astrology. Sorry, sir? Okay. I think we'll end here. Yes, sir? The last question. Yes.
Could you explain how Sivaksha appeared and how she was raised?
What do you mean by? What do you mean by how she was raised? Did her mother dress her up cute like a girl, or did she try to hide her like a boy, or what do you mean? Yes.
And just
wondering
when she appeared.
Yeah, when you're in prison, the whole time with Kamsa. Remember, you came and there was a daughter? So that's your other mother.
She was there.
Subhadra's
there.
Yeah, Subhadra's your other mother. So you have Krishna Balaram in your other mind.
Yes,
that's right. Same Subhadra. You know, so that's the whole point. His Kamsa couldn't kill her, right? He threw her on the ground and she rose up in the air. Said, you know, you're a bit foolish here. You know, you're not going to kill the, you know, the Lord's energy like that. So, you know, but then she, you know, he adjusted his focus onto Krishna. So then he would leave her alone. So. Yes, no? Okay. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki. 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 Srila Prabhupada ki.